Blog Talk Radio.
If you have and know of people that have young ones, youth,
preteens, teenagers in their homes. And if you feel like society has tied your hands as to how you can guide and discipline and raise your child and keep them safe from a world that has obviously shown us worldwide that lives don't matter, and not just through incidents with law enforcement, but also incidents on community against community and family members against family members and gangs, you know, against rival gangs. And we see it. We see it. We're overwhelmed and we're frustrated with what we see on media. And not just on media. Many of us have experiences in our own up close and personal where we know of someone from our neighborhoods or even in our family that have died a senseless death. We understand that just recently in the city of Compton, a little girl who was not even old enough to make decisions and choices was just gunned down senselessly. And so we see it constantly. I could just go on and on and on with a list of things that we see going on. And I am excited for the guest that we're going to have on our show for tonight. And I'm going to just tell you that the guest that we have on our show tonight, I'm just going to do briefly, and then I know I'm going to welcome him into the studio and let him elaborate. But it is Mr. Ken Bell, and he is a retired L.A. County sheriff. He's worked for the L.A. County DA's office for 15 years. He was a sheriff for 21 years, so that's a combined 36 years in law enforcement. He is now retired. He is the CEO and founder of Ken Bell Associates, which is a consulting group and I'll let him explain exactly what they do. They do a lot of training. He also is a teacher or taught in the L.A. City Schools for 13 years. He's taught at his church Sunday school for 20 years, and then he's his church youth counselor, and he's been that for 25 years. So not just involved in the community from a law enforcement perspective, but also involved in his church. And so I think that's a great balance. Probably if we had more law enforcement that had a firm foundation, we probably wouldn't see some of the things that we do see. We would probably have them, such as the gentleman that's going to be joining us on tonight, having more of a heart for the youth and really want to see these youth get on the right track. So without further delay, I want to welcome to our studio Ken Bell. Are you in the studio tonight?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes, I am, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, welcome to Process and the Pain. I thank you for accepting the invitation. And after our first talk, I knew that you have a wealth of wisdom and knowledge and information that people need to hear. People really need to hear. So I'm going to just see if you'll take a few moments to our listening audience. The only thing they know is they've heard your name. They've heard a brief discussion, and all they know is your voice. So if you just take some time to share who Ken Bell is and paint a picture for our audience so that we go further in the show, they can really get a perception.
Okay, and it will be an honor. Number one, for you to even ask me, I take great honor in being able to say anything. If there's just one life, one family, or one person affected by this particular program, it was worth it for me to be here for the violence and the sadness that I have seen. I will tell you, I was born in L.A., and I was raised the first early part of our lives in the Aliso Housing Projects. I'm from a family of eight. I had a mom and a dad, and I'm going to say and a dad. I mean, he is the biggest male figure that I've ever had in my life. And I believe he's the one that allowed me and my three other brothers to be able to go on and have successful lives. I laugh sometimes when I think about it. When I did join the sheriff's department, and I remember standing in formation, and there was one of the officers there that was training us. You know, they kind of come at you rough and tough and all that kind of stuff. And you know, there were some cadets kind of afraid, but I was thinking about how my dad had come at us as young people and how stern he was, that academy training was nothing as far as pressure, if you're talking about peer pressure, because my father did not take any wooden nickels. He had two jobs to raise eight kids, and so he was very stern with us. I don't mean brutal, no brutality, none of that stuff, but he didn't let us get away with anything without us being challenged by him. My first assignment was working in the jails, in the L.A. County jails, and it was great training for me because I got a chance to see many of the young men and the older guys that I would run into as years went, you know, my career went on. But I learned how to deal with people man-to-man in a setting where there was no guns, no knives. It was my conversation. I learned how to communicate. And so that was the greatest gift that I had, to be able to communicate and work in the jails. Then I went to patrol, in the patrol car. I know everybody talks about the police being brutal. I had a great career, never shot anybody, got shot at, but never shot anybody. And I'm not saying because I didn't, I'm a great guy, but I'm just thanking God that it was something that didn't happen for me. I started working, I was assigned to the first gang unit in L.A. County. So I've seen it from the beginning until this day, today. And we can talk more about that later, but I'm just saying that's the early part of my career working as a gang officer. They call it the Operation Safe Street, OSS gang unit, which is still in function today. And I will say this, I'm just going to be straight out. I was in an all-minority gang unit, probably the first and only minority gang unit that L.A. County has had. It was totally a minority gang unit. And we had four blacks and one Hispanic, and we were considered one of the top gang units in L.A. County. Also, but probably one of the best things that happened to me, I ended up teaching high school. I had my teaching degree, and they wanted an officer to go into Washington High School to teach. And I was kind of ridiculed by my peers, like, Ken, you can't go in that school. You're going to go in there by yourself on that campus. They had a reputation, had gangs in and around the community. Right. And I said, hey, I'm going to go on in there. Let's see what happened. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the best thing that ever happened to me as far as working with young people. For 10 years, I had the pleasure and opportunity to see kids, young people, and we laughed and joked, and we learned our lesson. And they even talked me into coaching football. I even coached the football team for 2 years on the defensive side. And I formed friendships and alliance with young people as a teacher, coach, and a man with a lot of young people. So it was very, very, very valuable for me. I left the sheriff department. I went over to the district attorney's office, which was the part that I want to focus on more for tonight, is that I had to deal with the families of the loved ones who, their loved ones who have been killed. I had to find the witnesses. I had to bring in the court. I had to deal with people that were just broken up and broken down because of the devastation in their families. So I got a chance to see all spectrum of from the beginning to the end, and a lot of times people forget about it when they think when it goes to court, it's all over. That's just the beginning of the real sadness. Like that family you spoke about, that 1-year-old child. You know, they let that young man that they arrested go because evidently was enough to file on him, which is a whole other story. My whole point is the whole system is very tough, and we have a lot of work to do in law enforcement to reach some of the areas where we want to reach for peace. Just give you a little snapshot of my background. And one thing I didn't mention, I'm also a school board member. I've been a school board member in where I live for 27 years. So I got involved because of my kids were here in the school district, and I wanted to know what they were doing. So I got elected. I've been elected, and I've been a school board member for 7 terms.
Wow, I tell you, just listening to your bio and your, you know, and all that you've done, I mean, is very well rounded. And I want to go back. I'm going to go back to when you said about you going into the schools, because you said that, you know, your colleague kind of ridiculed you, like, you're going to go in there and you know you're a sheriff. Arrested some of these people, you'd arrested their families. How you think it's going? You think you're not gonna have beef? And you said that you ended up building bonds.
It was the best thing ever happened to me. It was absolutely the best thing ever happened to me, and probably to a lot of young people, because I was a real person to them, and they weren't just gang members or thugs, or, you know, there were some that needed to go to jail because of the crimes. But I didn't look at them that way. They had to show me that they didn't want to act right. But it was really a labor of love. It changed between the kids I taught in the school and the young people who I was a counselor with at my church. They gave me the balance to keep me from falling off the edge when I saw so much violence in the streets daily. Because everybody's not, you can't just take a cookie cutter and say they're all this, they're all that, they're all gang members, they can't learn. You can't do that. You have to love everybody.
So if I hear you correctly, your success in going to that school was the fact that you were able to treat each one as an individual.
I had a mom tell me, said, "Mr. Bell, I don't know what you do in that school." She said, "My son don't like to go to school, but he said, Mom, sometimes I want to ditch, but I can't ditch Mr. Bell's class." And that was the greatest honor for me to know that a young person, when you see their eyes light up in that classroom, it's just something you can't. And I know teachers say that all the time, but it's something you can't compare to anything else. It's just great to know that you made a difference in a kid's life. And they made a difference in my life. See, that's what people forget about. They made a difference in my life.
Well, let me ask you a question. What was just considering that you were in the midst of that and you spent years in the gang unit, what were some of the constraints? What were the things that you've seen that in a lot of cases contribute to the type of behavior that was going on?
You know what? Great question. And this is the area I think that's really missed. And this is just me talking. I call it gang subculture. We all have a culture, but there's a subculture. And I think the real root cause of gang violence is the breakdown of the family structure and marriages. And you know, some of these fatherless young men, there's some angry and aggressive young people because they haven't had that structure that's given to them. And we underestimate the influence the parents have regarding whether their kids grow up to be law-abiding citizens or not. And there were some statistics that, you know, only 6% kids, that have safe homes and good supervision, provide stability, became delinquent despite living in inner city areas. You know, like when, you know, you heard that thing about 100 days, 100 nights, there was a gang problem in L.A. and it was on TV and they talked about this as the murder corridor. In that murder corridor that's listed, that's saying it's this bad community, there's homes of kids that live there with parents that are doing the right thing because they got parents there that has raised them. Family instability is a better predictor of violent crime than being poverty, lack of social services, or even race. So it's important that we understand how important the family is. Like young single mothers do less monitoring of their children than older married mothers do. And they're more inclined to be inconsistent, angry, and some have harsh discipline methods that sometimes backfires. And then we want social programs to reduce crimes, but it can't by itself. Giving social services doesn't necessarily rebuild a family. It doesn't. And then we say they watch, listen to rap songs and violent movies. I say that if a rap song or a violent movie, because my kids had to go through it, if that turned your child into a criminal, there wasn't much in that child already. You understand what I'm saying? And so if that 2-hour or 5-minute rap video turned you into a violent criminal, there wasn't a lot of things in that child for him or her to make the right decision. And so one thing we have to do is realize that our kids are the ones, and these are the two phrases I use. Crime is not corrected in the electric chair, but you start in the high chair. And the time to teach obedience to authority is in the playpen, not the state pen. I've had mothers say, "Mr. Bell, can you take my son and ride him around in your car and put the handcuffs on him and scare him?" I said, "Ma'am, you want me to do in 15 minutes what you haven't done in 15 years? Come on now, let's be real." And I sit down and try to talk to them about how you need to do some things on your own daily. Don't expect me to frighten him in 15 minutes to make him to go right. That won't work. So it's important. Parents have to teach their kids by example, and then you have to exhibit that kind of behavior that they require. And if that change is going to occur, we have to change or affect the way young people will go about selecting the values, what's accepted and important at an early age. Because once started, it's really, really tough for kids to make that change. And you'll find a lot of guys and young ladies that come out of prison and they want to make the change. But look at the terrible price that it paid. I have a godson that just got out. He spent 14 years, and he had his brother and sister. He said, I went in, I told him I could only come down and hug you, you know, physically, because I had a chance to go into the jail and actually, you know, go in. Any rate, he told me, he said, Pops, he said, I had to make a choice. I either have to stay inside or go outside. If I stayed inside, I could have been like my brother and sister. But if I go outside, I have to do what the guys on the streets do. I have to join and do what they do. Then what I really messed up is when I got a gun and I saw people afraid of me. He said, man, it just something changed in me. And he said, I spent 14 years thinking about that decision that I made years ago. So, again, I'm just using that one example. Those are the kind of things that make kids go in another direction.
Wow. You know, and like you said, he said he made a choice. His brother and sisters, same environment, being raised the same way, but they made a choice that they didn't want to be a part of their environment, and they stayed in and went out and became a part of his environment.
And unfortunately, that happens more often than it should. But I can say, praise the Lord, that I have seen some young men have gone in and they've come out. And boy, if the Lord get a hold of them, it can really change them. There's a young man. I'm so proud of him. He spent a lot of time. I chased him all over Los Angeles because he was in gangs and dealing drugs. And I was the first one he looked up when he got out of prison. First one he looked up. And one day he told me, he called me Papa Bear. He said, "Little Papa Bear." He said, "Man, let me tell you something." He said, "Every time, all I got to think about is that clink." He said, "Because every night when they tell us, everybody get in your cell," they say, "Get in one." That's just the word they use. And he said, "I hear that clink in that jail cell." He said, "I know I can't go nowhere but from this little 4x6 little cell in there. And there might be three dudes in that cell if it's overcrowded. Somebody got a upper bunk, bottom bunk, and somebody on the floor. That's it. You know." And he said, "All I got to do is remember that clink." And I said, "You know what? I got to stay straight." So, yeah, but what a terrible price to have to pay for that. That's the bad part about it. So.
Well, what I would like to do, because this is interesting, and before I get on to the next phase of your life, because you have different segments here of your life, but before I get into the next two phases of your life, I want to find out from our listening audience if anyone has any questions or comments in regards to what Ken has spoken already. Please dial 1 on your dial pad. That will let our team know that you have a question or a comment, and we will bring you in. Well, while we're waiting, if people want to ask the questions, I want to continue on. So we've talked about your years in the law enforcement and as a teacher to the youth, as well as being at the DA office and actually having to experience these families going through. And like you said, everybody thinks once a person gets convicted who committed the crime that's it, but the families live on with this tragedy forever.
Can I share something with you? If you don't, and if I'm out of line, just tell me. But it's important. Well, and I shouldn't say it's important, but I there's some things. If their parents on the line, can I talk a little bit about some active supervision things they could do? Can I share that?
Yes, please.
Would you, I mean that, because, see, I could say a lot of things, and I've, you know, like I said, the mama who wants me to take a little kid and lock him, put him in my car, and put handcuffs on him in 15, 20 minutes, I want to just go over some things that you know, I do some parent training from time to time, and I call one of them is active supervision, and that's the who, what, where, and why. Like, who is my child with? Remember I told you about the young man that was out in the streets? If his mama knew who he was with, that wouldn't have happened. What is my child going to be doing? So if they said, "Mama, I want to go somewhere," what are you going to be doing? And then where is your child going to be going? Where is he going or she going? And when will my child be coming home? And why should I let you go? And the child has a responsibility to give all those answers to a parent. You know, and so it's important that, you know, to me, that's what I call supervision. Those are you need to ask them who, what, where, when, and why. And if you can get those answers for your kid, especially when they're young, if you start off with those and say, "I need to know where you're going." See, because it's so important That same parent that don't know when I meet him at the hospital or if I come to that crime scene and their child is laying on the ground and they're about to go into an ambulance and they look at me and they wish they may have had some other things, you know, that they could have imparted with their kids. And then it's also important that, you know, they need to get their parenting skill. So they need to increase their awareness of what your child, what they have in their room, what kind of clothes they have, know who their friends are, know where they hang out. Then you talk to them and discuss the consequences of being in the gang. And it's also important that that they stay in contact with, you know, is there a church or there's a group that they're working with and they're involved with with their young people and they know where they are. Are you spending time with your kids? Plan activities so you can spend some alone time. Expose them to different places outside of your neighborhood, parks, libraries, beach, mountains. Give them some attention. But you know what? If you don't give them attention, the streets, you should see the older guy, they could tell me, he said, Bell. A lot of them just say, hey, Bell, see that little dude right there? Man, I'm going to train him up. He's going to be a cold little guy. He's going to be a killer for me, man. He going to be my little dope man because he got a lot of heart, and I'm going to raise him. They can identify him that young, and they will go get your children if you let them loose out there. I'm saying the guys, they know. So you need to set those limits and let them know what's acceptable behavior and unacceptable behavior. And so it's important that they don't have a lot of unsupervised time out there on the streets. And so it's important that you teach them, you know, that they need to have respect for, you know, other people in their property. I say, I have five. They said, well, Dan, I want to go. I said, I want to meet your friend. Bring him over here. I didn't mind him coming here. Give me a chance to look at him. I want to see. I said, what's your daddy do? What's your mama's? You know, I want to know about who my son or daughters are hanging out with. So
exactly.
I wanted to know, like my son, usually in athletics, every time he was at practice, every game he had, I was there. I'm watching what he does, and I want to know where he was because if they choose friends that I think they could be a little on the negative side, I either got to cut it loose or I have to bring that kid that he likes and maybe bring him close to me and see if I can't help that young man if he wants to be my son's friend and let him know what I like and what I don't like. So it's important. And then you got to give your kids responsibility. Get them involved in some things at home to learn that they can give back. You know what I mean? And so it's important to those are some things that they can do. And I didn't allow or I didn't think it's I think it's important for not to allow you know, you hate to say gang-related things, like every time it's red, blue, and you can't go by the red, blue stuff anymore. Kids and they switched all it up. They know they get identified and other gang members identify them. So that's not the point. It's your attitude, and it's where they go and what they do and who they may want to hang with. So I can give you some real simple kind of involvement if you find your kids going off. Truancy is usually the first sign of change. They don't want to go to school. Truancy, that's one of the earth. And usually follow right behind it, grade decline. You're talking about fifth or sixth grade. That's when usually around fifth and sixth grade. Attitude change. All of a sudden they don't want to, oh, man, oh, mom, oh, pop, no. The lack of respect for authority. You start getting notes from home to teachers and they're not giving them respect. I know it's easy to want to go up to who's messing with my son or my daughter, but find out if it's a lack of respect that he or she is showing because gang members want to do that. Or if you find out they got some new friends and maybe they don't want to bring their new friends around because they know you're looking at them, and bring them kids in so you know, because if they're deviant behavior kids or kids who may be a little on the gang-related side, you need to know, you know. So those are just some little things that I usually try to tell parents because sometimes they want to call you way after something has occurred. And it's kind of – I'm not saying it's never too late, but, boy, is it sure tough. It is really tough once some of these kids get deep into that antisocial behavior pattern. It's really tough. So.
Right, exactly. So I'm in agreement with you. It's always better to be proactive than reactive. And what
yes.
we see is reactive. You know, what we see on the TV oftentimes when a situation takes place is you see a parent pleading and crying, and the first thing they say is, my kid was a good kid. He wasn't involved in gangs, or he didn't do this. And then what we find out is that absolutely he did. You know, we find out that, yeah, what you may have not known, or even you seen the signs and you didn't address them, but what we find is that in many cases there was no respect for authority.
Yes, yes.
You know, that they lack. You said the key thing here, there's some sign. And these are not, we're not saying for the listening audience that that's what everybody do, but what we are saying is that there are some things, there's some warning, there's red flags.
Yes, absolutely.
Is what we're just mentioning. I will make sure that for those who are interested in getting this, the mothers or fathers that's on the line, that I will make sure that you get the information about active supervising as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I didn't mean to disturb you, but I just thought it was important to mention that.
Exactly. So we will make sure that they get all the bullet points. I think those were excellent bullet points. And me having two sons, one is grown, but the other one becoming, you know, the teenager getting ready to hit high school, I definitely, you know, and it's a natural. There's a natural thing that takes place even outside of, maybe it's not a sign that they're going in that direction, but I think it's just a natural about 13 for teenagers, girls and boys, that there's a transition going on because they're no longer, they're too old to be treated like a kid, and they're too young to be treated like an adult. So I think there's a part of trying to find yourself. It's critical. That's a critical part of time in their life. What do you think with that?
Well, you know, I can share something with you, and I mean, this is so clear. We used to, now everybody's out of school different times for Easter. They used to have one time when all the kids in L.A. were out at the same time. We used to have, my church is on 52nd and Hoover in L.A., and we used to take kids from the community. We've had over 60 kids. We go on retreats. And I knew that some of the kids, we purposely picked some of the kids to go with us that had a little edge on them, you know what I mean? But I would try to mix them in with some of the kids who I know we had worked with, and they know what we were trying to do. And I've had a kid tell me, hey, you know, Mr. Bell, you know, this guy brought his gun with him to retreat. I said, okay. And I didn't go in and run in the tent and grab him and all of that stuff. I said, look here, I sent him and some other counselors on a hike. And while they were on the hike, I went in and got the gun, you know. And then when he came, they came back, and I pulled him to the side, and I told him, I said, we got a couple of choices. I said, my first inclination is to take you home right now. I said, right now. I said, well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to keep the gun with me. And when this is over, I'm going to make sure your mom and daddy get this gun. I said, but the fact that you disrespected, I really don't like that. But I said, because we're here, I'm going to get the Lord a chance to deal with you, and I'm going to let you deal with the Lord. And do you know that on the last day of the retreat, you know, we had an altar call, and that's just what we did, you know. And the young man, and he opened up and said, I almost don't want to go home. I wish I could stay out here. I just feel so much more at ease. The young man had pressure on him. He's got pressure on him. And once you get into that environment, you have to perform. You have to do what the neighborhood youngsters do. And so it was really interesting to see a guy that came there, a tough guy, brought his little gun because he figured, hey, I keep it with me. And I never told any of the other kids. Never did. I mean, because it wasn't a topic to, I wasn't trying to embarrass the young man. Now, but I felt responsible for everybody else on the retreat. But I'm just using that as an example of he did not want to go home because of the pressure that he had at his house, and it was gang related. You understand what I'm saying? So
yes.
Some of these kids,
yes.
they're in it because that's part of their environment.
Right, exactly, and they don't have a choice.
They don't have a choice, or the choice they have are very slim, and they have to take being ridiculed. I do know some young men who they're in a house. Matter of fact, you know what? I'm gonna tell you. Well, I don't. Maybe there's a young man. I'm not gonna give any particulars, Bunny, but I'm so proud of him. This young man, he came and spoke to a youth group of mine, and he told some of the kids in the group. He said, "Listen, some of you guys might want to ditch and you want to, you know, all that kind of stuff." He said, "You guys don't know this." He said, "But when I went to school, there was a time that the police hit my house and they had us all out, my grandmama, everybody on the curb, handcuffed. He said, I'm sitting there at 7:30 in the morning, and they finally realized I wasn't part of the criminal side, and they got me and they let me go. And he said, nobody at school knew I came to school and I had been through what I've been through. I didn't sleep. They got us up at 5 in the morning. And this young man just sent me his information. He, you know where he works now? He graduated from San Jose. He went to one of the other universities, and he's now working at Stanford University as one of their interns in their athletic and in their I can't even think of the term, but he's in the athletic department at Stanford University. And this young man was surrounded by a lot of negative stuff. And when I brought him back to speak to our young people, I'll never forget Darius. And he's a great, great young man. And so even though that they can make a choice, but it's a tough choice. And this young man made a tough choice. And it paid off for him. And guess what? Everybody proud of him at the house now. Because he saw his way through it.
Yes, and that's a success story. You know, I'm sure that you probably know this, and I would think, you know, even when you were saying about active supervision, and oftentimes you have teenage pregnancies, and so you have mothers and fathers who are still kids yet themselves and just don't have the skill set, don't have the resources in order to do, you know, to be great parents. And they probably came from teenage pregnancies. So you have kids raising kids, and actually that's an oxymoron because kids can't raise kids.
No, they can't.
So it seems to me that oftentimes when you get a success story of somebody that was on the wrong path who, you know, who was touched by someone was willing to mentor, someone was willing to love on them, someone was willing to hold them accountable and hold them responsible, I think oftentimes that's what the youth really want. They want to be loved. They want to know that someone cares. And how they, you know, and how they know that is through holding them accountable.
That's what gangs do. They love them. They look. You know, you think about what you're willing to die for. A gang member is willing to die for his color, his set. My homeboy, I heard you disrespected me. I sent a text. I'm tweeting you, and we got a tweet of beef going. Beef going on, and they will die for that. Come on now, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, when they get involved, they get involved all the way. Our job is to steer them away from the negative to the positive, so they can be involved all the way with the positive. And that's where it's important for us to understand. It's absolutely important for us if you got a second, I can tell you some levels, the involvement levels. I'm not going to read it or talk about it like I'm reading it to you. But level one, there's kids who fantasize about being gang members based on what they see on TV, rap videos, and movies. You see it all the time. They fantasize. Then I think the second level is that because, see, I know guys think that the girls don't like them unless they got, remember, what's that song? A rough neck. A girl wants a rough neck. They want, you know, so they figure if I don't look or act a certain way, I'm not going to get the girls. Then you got the second level, and they mix that fantasy level with that, and they live in that area, and they started developing this gang attitude, and they start dressing, and they sag, and they get to doing some things because they think that makes them more acceptable. Then the next level is that, you know, they would get in there where they become an associate or wannabe or a young person that can hang around, and they psychologically prepare to join if somebody want to jump them in or if they feel like they're being threatened. They say, yeah, man, they need a little backup. Okay, that's that third level. Then that fourth level would be when they actually join and they become a member and they get jumped in. That means they get beat up or, you know, socked, or and they call it courting in. Or you said, hey, man, if you want to be down, you got to rob somebody. You go give me this or bring me a gun or go get your daddy's gun or whatever. So they get in and they become associates then. And so that leaves them pretty well in the gang. And the five, the fifth level, that's hardcore. Total commitment to the gang. The gang is their lifestyle, and they're revered or feared by others, and they have done time, and their personal goals are all for the neighborhood. They'll do that against their parents or anybody because they have sold out to that gang. I mean, I'm not trying to minimize it, but you see how ISIS, and you just look what they do. And
right.
They go kill and they will kill anybody that's against anything that have to do anything against the ISIS ideology. Christianity is one of them. They don't play. I mean, they cut your head off right in front of you. Anybody, don't matter. And so it's the same basic mentality, that subculture lifestyle. So it's one that you have to really, really fight against, and that's why you have to continually show kids, remember I said, spend time with your children, expose them to other things, get them into team activities, spend a little time with them. And it doesn't always take money. It's really more time spending with them.
Yes.
My father, I don't know how he did it, raised 8 kids, 4 boys, 4 girls, and he still had time to take us hunting. He would take us, we would go play miniature golf. He would sit around and we would talk, and he had a barbershop, so all of us worked in his barbershop because we had to shine shoes and we had to sweep the floors and clean up and all of that, and that was, we didn't even think that's what we thought we were supposed to do, but all that was training for us. He was teaching us responsibility. There would be sometimes I'd shine enough shoes where I could buy my own lunch. I didn't like that because I didn't have no money, but that was part of our training, you know. So I'm saying he spent time with us even though he didn't have time. The time he had, he spent with us. You know, the only day he had off was on Sunday. And he didn't always take us to church, but he talked about the Lord. And because Sunday was absolutely the only day. I never will be mad at my daddy about that. Never. He raised eight great kids. I don't mean great like we're famous, but we're solid individuals, every one of us, every one of us. And we came straight for the projects.
Yeah. Well, you know, and your example of, you know, when people talk about people being or these kids becoming a product of their environment, well, you're an example that you don't have to become a product of your environment, because if you grew up in the, you know, like you said, in the Aliso, I mean, you have some surroundings that weren't necessarily the best surroundings.
You know what? It's also, I had an opportunity working in the barbershop, seeing every personality. We saw pimps, number runners. We saw the ministers in the community. We saw winos. We saw everybody come in the barbershop because everybody get the haircut. And we're sitting there, and I listen and watch. My brothers and I listen and watch. And we had a chance to see my father. And it was Bell Brothers Barbershop. So his brothers, two brothers in mine, and my mother was a beautician, and she was in the back. So we had a chance to not only, we knew where our money came from in our household. We saw our parents work, you know. So it had great examples. At the time, we didn't know it, you know. And I didn't like it because I couldn't play sports like the other kids on Saturday because we had to go to the barbershop. But that was what we had to do. I ended up playing football in high school, and anyway, that's a whole other story. But anyhow, I just thought I would share that with you.
So let's get into wow, this has just been awesome. The information that has went forth. We do have a caller that has a question. We're gonna take her question quickly, or take the caller's question quickly, and then I want to get into, when we come back from the questions from the caller, I want to get into your involvement in the church. So caller, hey. Area code 562, last 41130. Welcome to Process in the Pain.
Thank you. I just want to chime in and say I love listening to this man.
Thank
he is
you.
My uncle.
Thank you.
And I'm so proud to be able to have him come out tonight and have, you know, a dialect with us about what, you know, where our elders have come from. But as I say that, I do worry about our young people, because some of us didn't grow up in the hood. Some of us did grow up in suburbia, and it's really hard because these parents took time out. These parents did these things, and it's sad to see that some of our suburban young men and women, choose to be, step across on the other side. I just pray that they get back on the other side of that fence before it's too late.
I agree with you on that. I really do. I agree.
And, you know, I don't, and like you said, a lot of us didn't. Praise God. Praise God. In the early beginnings, I came from the hood. But, you know, my mother and father found another place called Sharita's, got on that freeway and found it. And that's where I am. You know, praise God. And I'm thankful because I could have been one of the teenage pregnancies, and I didn't have kids like that. But as I say this, I'm involved with lots of children. And I just want to say that my suburban little sisters are not always going the right way. And I want to pray for them because life ain't easy. We couldn't wait to be grown. And, you know, this ain't easy. I wish I could go home and pay my bills and buy the groceries and buy my clothes. But at the end of the day, I had to grow up. And I'm blessed to be able to grow up. But it is not an easy world. And I don't understand how they see us as parents. Like you said, you see where your parents' money come from. I know my kids see where mine come from.
Mm-hmm.
I work hard. But it's just sad that it's like some of us are not getting it. As much as we try, it's not getting it. And I know I have to say, stay in prayer. You know, just pray for them.
Well,
but boy.
We're going to get to that part of the show because there is, you know, there's hope. There is hope when we all line up.
Can I just answer one? One of the things, just don't be discouraged in the sense that you can't reach it. I used to worry about the whole city of Los Angeles, County of Los Angeles, that's where I worked. But I got to the place where I said, Lord, he was like, Ken Bell, you just deal with the people I put in front of you, buddy. You just deal with the people that I put in front of you. There's cases that I worked. If I went and start telling you the cases and some of the people, I had people talk to me like never before because all I did is cared about them. And the Lord said, I'm going to put somebody in front of you, and I want you to love them and to share with them. And I can't save everybody, but you know what? The ones that I may have touched, there's a young man, I know you guys get tired of hearing me talking, but I got to tell you about this kid. He came home, I told you he looked me up. He is an evangelist today, and he goes and hand out clothes and stuff to the homeless. He was a major drug dealer in Los Angeles. And so I'm saying the little time I took with him, now he's touching lives all across the city. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you can't everybody, but you don't know the one that you touch might be the one to touch a whole bunch of other people. So I used to worry about, I can't get over here, I can't get over there. The Lord said, look, you just do who I give you. I'm going to send somebody your way. You deal with them. So first, I had to start where? At my house. I had to start at my house. And, you know, so that was most important. I can't run around and save everybody, and my kids go crazy, you know. So I had to start at home. Anyway, let me shut up, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No, that is okay. That's quite okay. Caller, did you have anything else you want to say?
I just
want to
say thank you. And you guys, I'm so blessed to have this in my family. So amen. Take care.
Amen, sister.
Amen. Thank you, caller. So we're going to get to, we're coming rapidly. Boy, I tell you, see, an hour goes really quick when you're talking about things that matter. And so I want to get into, I think I'm going to bring this subject up to take us to the end of the show.
Okay.
And you've talked about your career in law enforcement, and you've talked about your career as a teacher in the school, in the LA school district. You've spoken about really you've overall been a mentor, and that's awesome. Now I want to get to, because with all of that is great, all of that is fine. There had to be a foundation. There had to be something that you could stand on. There had to be something to give you hope on those hopeless days when you just didn't think one of your kids was going to get it right. There had to be something that every time you walked out your house to know that you would come back and see your family again.
Yes.
There had to be something. What was that something for you?
Well, you did open up an area that is real important to me. My wife, bless my heart, my wife, we've been married 47. I better get that right. 47 years. She took a chance on me. I was all right. You know, somebody, he all right. I mean, I was all right. But I went to church because she went to church. You know what I mean? And then I kind of, it's like I said, I don't, you know, all this old, you know, the preaching and stuff. That's okay because see, I had my daily patrol stuff. I'm out there with and the criminals and all that stuff. So sometimes I had a little edge on me, if you understand what I'm saying. And I remember when they would always come time for invitation, and they would say, you know, anybody not saved or what? No. I take what really made me think about it is that I remember this one minister. No, my wife, I came home, I was tired, bone tired, and she said, you going back to church with me later on this evening? And I'm saying, Lord have mercy, I ain't got no time to be running over there to that church. I done worked, did all my patrol. People ought to be glad I'm out there saving lives. You know what I mean? That was my attitude.
Yeah.
And she, but my wife didn't let nothing stop her. She said, hey, me and the kids, we're going to, you know, I think we only had two kids at the time. And so she getting the kids ready, and I said, hold up. She was kind of hot because I'm holding her up, right? And I quickly got dressed, and I remember sitting at the back of the church like, you know, I want everybody to see me. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I came today. You ought to give me a trophy. I'm here. And I remember sitting back there, and there was a guest minister, and he was asking about, is anybody having any problems or things that are bothering you? And we're just going to take a moment and pray about it. And he had said that he used 1 John 1:9, about the Lord being faithful and just, cleansing you of all your sins. And he said, I want you to write on this little 3x5 card all the problems you're having and things, and we're going to bring them to the altar, and we're going to ask the Lord to deal with them. And I'm saying, oh, man. But he handed the cards out, so I had a little pen. I wrote all the stuff down. And one of the things I really had problems with was smoking, regular cigarettes. But I smoked a pack and a half, Pall Mall Red, Chesterfield. I smoked every day. And I put them down on a card, and I went up to, I prayed. Now, I didn't do nothing different or special or whatever. Sit down and whatever. And usually I didn't light up a cigarette until I left about, maybe a block and a half from the church. I didn't want everybody to see me lighting up at the church, you know. So I about a block and a half away. And I didn't think no more about it. And one night I was riding on patrol with my partner, and it was about 1:45 in the morning. And we was getting ready to, you know, usually around the time you got to be careful because a lot of people rushing to get to the liquor store because they got about 15 minutes before they close. So traffic pick up just a little bit at that time. And I remember going through this one intersection, and we was going through, and I see this car coming too fast. We had the right of way, but they had the stop sign, and they weren't stopping. And I said, Steve, I said, man, that dude's going to hit us. Bam, hit our patrol car, spun our car all around, and, you know, in the air, and come back down, and, man, I'm falling down on the floor, and I get back up and glance at my hair, and I'm looking at my partner's bleeding in the head, and then I look up, and I see a guy looking in the car window, and I said, that's the guy that's trying to hit us. I said, he's trying to kill us. So I'm going to go get him. My car is jammed. I can't get out. And I hit the door, and I couldn't get out, and I kept on hitting, and I finally got it open, and I remember seeing this guy running, and I remember all my training came in. I had the guy right in my line sight, and I was about to pull the trigger. And something said, ding, why are you shooting him? And I said, I don't know. And I pulled my gun back. Just that quick, the guy was gone. Then I hear shooting behind me, pow, pow. My partner's in shock. He's shooting at somebody else. And anyway, I took his gun. I laid him down. I called for assistance. And I'll never forget the first unit that got there. My partner said, can't let me have a cigarette. And I'm feeling my pockets. And I said, man, I ain't got no cigarettes. How come I don't have no cigarette? And I asked the guy that came, I said, man, let me have a cigarette. I said, Steve needs a cigarette. So he gave me two because he knew I smoked too. So I gave a cigarette to my partner, and the ambulance getting him, taking him up. I had the other one in my pocket. And I get to the hospital, and I'm telling you, here I am in all this accident. And you know where my mind went back to? Sitting up at that church, and I put on that little card that I didn't want to smoke or smoking was a problem for me. I don't know when I stopped smoking. I don't know how I stopped smoking. I never went through any incantations about stop smoking, but I did not smoke anymore. I've never had a desire, never had. And that was, I said, you know what? This is a big God. I better pay attention. He took that habit from me just that quick, or I don't know how quick it was. I can't tell you. But I know I don't smoke. I mean, God took it, 1 John 1:9. Never will forget that. And reason I'm saying that, that was my basis when I realized God could use me if he cleaned me up. and get me where I need to be. And that's when I started getting with more time to the youth department and Sunday school teaching. I know that needed to know more about the word. I needed to know more about the scriptures. I needed to be able to share that part of my life, you know, and not just be a church member. And I got involved in the church. That's how I got started, because the Lord showed me, you just give me a little, just give me a little faith, and I got you. And I have never forgotten. And he has multiplied that over and over again, and I have never forgotten that. Never looked at a cigarette. I've kept cigarettes at my desk to give people when everybody could smoke in them days, you know, when I interviewed them. You got a cigarette? I said, sure, give it to them. I never have a desire, never had a desire to smoke, nothing. Lord just snatched it. And I just said, and I didn't go through any incantation, nothing. He just took it because I asked him, because he knew it would have the effect that it did have on me. And I'm just telling you, the Lord, he showed me his power that day, and he's allowed me to grow and grow and grow. And I don't mean grow like I'm big-time spiritual giant, but just it just allowed me to hold on to his garment, to the hem of his garment. Yes. And I've been holding on ever since. Yes.
Yes, well, definitely. When you think about your career and the things you've seen, definitely, you know, you serve a big God, because I'm sure you've seen a lot of your colleagues didn't make it home. We are coming towards the close of our show, and there's a couple of things I would like to do as people are listening in. I understand that you, you know, with your business, that you're a consultant, that you do some training. I also understand that you are available, that you do lectures at many schools and church group organizations, teaching them on recognizing street gang mannerisms and antisocial behavior patterns.
Yes.
Can you give us, because we only have a few moments left, I would like if you could give is there a website or an email?
Yes.
Where people could reach you if they're interested in bringing you into their youth organizations, or bring you in to do, you know, to do some training and or to lecture? How can they reach you?
Okay, my email, which is real quick, is kbell10044@aol.com. Again, kbell10044@aol.com. And for a full contact information about me, I have a small website. It's www.kenbellassociates.com. So that's again www.kenbellassociates.com, and it has all my contact information on there, my resume information, and some of the things that I've done and trained. And I do training for. I used to train all of L.A. County Probation Department, but when the state funding went bad, they changed a lot of their training format, and I have not trained for them in quite a while. That was one of the greatest thrills for me to be able. But I'm going up to Alameda County 2 weeks from now. No, yeah, 3 weeks from now to train their new probation officers there. And I train all over the nation in different places. They've asked me to come to train. I'm training tomorrow at the Golden West College, the Administration of Justice class. They have a new group of police cadets, and I'm training the gang component for the officers and in that academy. And so I've trained all over the United States. And I'm not saying that boastfully. I don't mean it like that. I'm just saying the experience is wide. And I consider it a privilege and an honor, and to be able to impart some of the knowledge, because behind all of the information I have, there's so much tragedy and sadness that I have seen. And to me, anything I can do to make somebody's life better, or for somebody else to be enthused to make a change, that's what thrills me. And when I have a cadet or an officer say, I helped him, that's one of the most tremendous things. Love to do parent things. I love that's the basis, right? The parents. You get me in front of some parents, we can rock and roll. And it's those who want it. I mean, everybody, you know, everybody don't want to hear it. You know, because
right,
it's hard
right.
for somebody to admit that they may not have done the right thing. But anyway, I hope I gave you enough information there.
Right, definitely. And I will make sure for those listening in that I will be posting on the Process in the Pain page some of these bullet points that were spoken on tonight so that if you did not get a chance to write them down or if you did not get Ken's information, I will be posting that on the Process in the Pain as well as the MCD Network Facebook pages. So I will post that so that you can get that information. And if you did not get the information, you can always feel free to email me at coachd@mycoachd.net, and I can always get you the information. I want to thank you, Ken, for blessing us on tonight, for being willing to come and share your experience. You've given out a lot of nuggets on tonight that I think that any parent specifically that's listening in could definitely take, they have something to take away from tonight's show that they could begin to implement in the raising of their kids. And for those whose kids are already growing out the house, you still may want to utilize this on your grandkids, you know, pass it on to now adult kids. So I think it was just great information. And, again, I just want to thank you for being willing to come on and be a guest on Processing the Pain. It truly has been a blessing. Our listening audience, I'm going to take a few minutes. If there is anyone else who has any questions for Ken or comments, if you would like to dial one on your dial pad, that will let our team know that you have a question, and we will bring you in. If not, we are at the end of our show, and I just want to thank each and every one of you once again for tuning in to Processing the Pain, and I hope that you join us next Thursday, same time, same place, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, as we continue to bring you relevant topics. Please tune in on Mondays for Relentless Pursuit with Alandis Harris and Tamika Sanders as they bring relevant topics to the millennium generation. And on Tuesdays, join us for Woman to Woman at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with Minister LaDon and Coach D. We appreciate your continued support, and our ask of you would be that you share the MCD Network, that you share our broadcast with others so that they can get a chance to enjoy and get this information. Again, we thank you for tuning in on tonight. Have a marvelous evening.